Hello, this is the Angry GM, and I have just finished proofreading aloud for all of you and the gathered audience here at Angry Games headquarters, the proofread aloud of an article whose title I forgot, Professor Angry's Office Hours on Being True. So now this is the part where I let people pose questions and ask comments and make statements and whatever that, wow, I'm really off today. Questions, comments, whatever, and I have 20 minutes to do it, and so far one question in the chamber from Lord Rutabaga, which goes, I have a friend who often gives me these what-if questions. I try to tell him to trust himself, but it hasn't worked thus far. What, besides therapy, might I recommend to him to help him internalize that? Nothing. There is nothing you can do. You have said what you need to say. You've said, look, wasting your time on hypotheticals, not a good use of your time. I don't want to be sucked into it. I suggest that you start just trusting yourself. So once you have said that, there is nothing you can do to make the person accept it. Trust me, I know. I give people advice every week, and there is nothing I can do to make them actually internalize it or take it or use it. That's just the way it is. People, you know, all you can do is make the recommendation. If they're a friend and you care how they're feeling, then they want to talk about their worries, listen to them. You know, just listen to them. It's like, wow, yeah, that does sound scary. Oh, that sounds intimidating. I understand. That's upsetting. You know, whatever it is, just listen to them. You know, say, and if they want your advice, say, well, look, you know, this is a hypothetical. I just, you know, I can't really weigh in on it. And I really don't think it's, you know, I don't think it's likely and it's probably not good to waste time and energy on. If they keep asking your advice, that's your advice. Beyond that, otherwise, if you just can't take it anymore, then just say, look, I'm not here for you anymore. Sorry, I can't do this anymore. I gave you the answer. The question is, are you this person's friend to help them do what they need to do and solve their problems? Or are you this person's friend because you care about them? If you're this person's friend because they care about them and they just need to talk to you because they're worried all the time, well, the only thing you can do is just, you know, let them spew their worries all over you. Proselys, not a question, comment. I feel called out by the don't worry and info gather. I definitely catch myself doing it, even still. Definitely a good reminder to just run games and worry once it's worth worrying. Thank you. Yes, I wouldn't have written that if I didn't fall into absolutely the same trap all the time. There are a lot of mental traps that we fall into, mainly driven by fear and anxiety. I'm not saying this is true in every case and that every person is the same, but it is a pattern of human behavior that when we are suffering from fear or anxiety over something, we will often delay engaging with it in a variety of ways that feel like they're helping us, even though they're not. Like, well, you know, how many times have you sat down and like just organized everything you need to do? It's like, you know what I need? I feel so overwhelmed. I just need a checklist. And you know what? Sometimes you do. Sometimes you need a checklist. But how many checklists have you made instead of just working on the thing you know is the priority that you just need to be working on? You know, like everybody knows the one thing right now that if it was off their plate, they would feel a little better. You don't have to write down a checklist. You know that that thing's there and there's a reason you're not doing it. So sometimes sitting down and organizing the checklist is legitimately because you don't know where to start. And other times it's because you know where to start, but you're scared to do it for some reason or because it's painful. So yeah, I mean, that's it. So I've been waiting for questions. I've had this pause that I've been waiting for more questions, but people seem to have just accepted what I've said today, which is totally fine. I love that. But also it makes for terrible comments. But Alyssa just pointed out that probably many listeners are worried about all the hypothetical ways I could yell at you if you asked a stupid question. But the thing is, this actually illustrates that Alyssa is not paying attention. Because remember, the point of separating worry from something actionable is if you have solid evidence to believe that the thing that has that you're worried about will actually happen, then it's a valid concern to be addressed. So in this case, I have a long history of yelling at people who ask stupid questions. In fact, I have a history of yelling at people who ask any question. I find being asked questions offensive and yet keep inviting people to do it. And then in fact, yelling at people for not asking questions, now we need to analyze this using our judgment to find a solution because we have determined that this is a valid concern. So the situation we find ourselves in is that Angry is now hosting a Q&A thread and is complaining that there are not questions being asked, but we are concerned that if we ask a question, it will result in us being yelled at and us being humiliated. But at the same time, as we analyze this, we also discover that we will be humiliated whatever type of question we ask. It's not a matter of the quality of the question. So there's no avoiding being yelled at. That's the cost of asking a question. So that's the first thing we understand about the situation. Now, the second thing to understand about the situation is that if a question isn't asked, Angry just starts yelling at random people. For example, while this was paused, I yelled at Arthur for something some totally different commenter had just posted and called him out by name. So if no questions are asked, then people are going to get yelled at random, which means now you have a situation where it's completely unavoidable. People are getting yelled at whether they ask questions or not, and regardless of the quality of the question. But at the same time, what we know of the history of Angry and questions are, even if someone asks a totally stupid question and he starts out yelling at them, there is almost always something interesting and insightful in his ranting answer. And even if it's not, it's at least entertaining to listen to. So now the real question is, do you have the courage to fall on your sword and throw out a question, knowing no matter what, someone's getting yelled at anyway, and there's a chance it'll be you, so you might as well just get yelled at in the hopes of providing entertaining and insightful content for others? That's the real situation, which is why it's not valid. And this is how worry now paralyzes you. Nobody can now do that because they're all worried, well, I'm going to get yelled at. But you're going to get yelled at anyway. Like, Alyssa, I just yelled at you for making that really stupid comment and not paying attention. And Mirden just asked a really stupid question. Which question were you hoping to see here? See, the problem with that question is, if there's something I wanted to talk about, if there's an answer I wanted to provide, I put out 20,000 words a month. I can answer every question that I want to answer or I think is worth answering. The only reason to open up this Q&A shit is for the questions I can't already think of. Okay, the ones that don't occur to me. Sexy gaming genius though I am, everything doesn't occur to me, you know. So, you know, these prompts, they give me stuff to talk about that wouldn't otherwise occur to me. They also are ways that you can tell me what you think is important for me to talk about. And some of it, like, obviously is going to be hypothetical bullshit. But some of it is actually going to be based on real practical situations you find yourself in, and I will probably help you through it, though I will yell at you. Okay, so Guy Quayle has asked, you wrote about including a failsafe with your Beth example. Can you expand on that? I don't really know how to expand on that, because, again, like, so, okay. Let's put this in the context of the speech I just screamed at you for 30 minutes. Okay. The situation I found myself in was, and this said, okay, now don't judge me here. This is going to get me in trouble. So that situation was a made up hypothetical situation. There is no Beth and she doesn't have a spider phobia. Okay. I've never had a Beth with a spider phobia at my table. So yes, I made up a hypothetical situation after just railing on that. But hopefully everybody listening understands the difference between me making up a hypothetical situation to provide a practical example and worrying over hypothetical nonsense that your brain shits out. But anyway, okay. So the situation that Imaginary Angry found his hypothetical self in was Beth sat down with him and said, I have a spider phobia. I cannot even stomach descriptions of spiders. It is very upsetting to me. And I, you know, so can you be aware of that and, you know, not spider? Okay, that's the situation. I'm starting a campaign. She's got the spiders. But the other part of the situation, and I spelled this out, was that number one, I, you know, hypothetical Imaginary Angry loves spiders. I don't really love spiders, but there was a deep-seated love buried in those examples, but it is not specifically for spiders. It is more for making players squirm. But anyway, that aside, and so anyway, I do like to make players squirm, okay? And spiders are a great way to make some players squirm, okay? So, but nonetheless, let's pretend Imaginary Angry. I know I like using spiders in my game. I have lots of ideas for spiders. Maybe, you know, like spiders are one of the things I always start my campaigns with. I don't know. It's just, I know me and this is a thing. I also know how I spin off descriptions and I just kind of get into improvised narration. So in looking at that situation, I've now identified, so my goal is I do not want to upset Beth. I want to respect her. You know, I want to respect her. This is not worth, you know, and this is not an issue where it's like, I can't run the game. I like spiders, but do I like spiders so much I'm willing to tell Beth to go home over it? Obviously, like, and I mean, that is a valid question. You know, like you can't, the answer can be yes. There's no right answers here. If I was so into running, if I was running a drow-based campaign in the Underdark, where the players are drow and, you know, they're rebelling against the Spider Queen and the final battle is with Lolth and all that stuff, that might be a serious problem if I have a spider phobe. I'd be like, And if Beth is just some random person I met on the internet and I'm running a game online, I might say, yeah, I'm sorry, you're just not a good fit for this campaign. If Beth is a good friend of mine and, you know, we've been gaming together forever and I didn't have specific plans, or even if I did have specific plans, I might change. So you weigh all of this shit in your head, right? It's like, so what is my goal here? Well, in this case, my goal is to retain Beth. It is not to send Beth away. So now I have a problem, though. I want to respect Beth's needs and I do not want to upset Beth. And I can live without purposely building spiders into my game, but I do recognize there is a potential for me to slip up, and it might be upsetting for her. I also realize that she's come to me in confidence, and nobody likes to share their issues with everybody. And so asking her to call it out vocally at the table is a problem. Like, all that stuff, I said, like, look, I might slip, you know, because this is how I do narration. And if I do and you find it disquieting, you need to let me know. But I'm also aware in Beth's situation. And if I wasn't aware of that, by the way, then it would be a conversation, right? Then I'd say to Beth, I'd be like, look, I'm going to respect this. I totally understand. But here's my problem. It's that sometimes narration just spills out of my face without me being consciously involved in it. So, like, what if I do slip and spiders or cobwebs or whatever, or like, you know, as you're brushing through a dungeon, like I describe, oh, you brush past cobwebs and spiders fill out on you and crawl in your armor, which is just I know that sounds silly, but that is just a perfectly normal, players in my table know that is perfectly normal, just transitional flavor text angry just sort of slips in. Sometimes a slug falls down your pants when you're exploring my world. That's just how it be. Okay? So because I know this about myself, I could then say to Beth, you know, what happens in this situation? And Beth's like, I would shit my pants and then leave and probably cry. And then I'm like, okay, that's not good. So we need a solution here. Would you feel okay calling it out at the table? And Beth's like, you know, I'm not really comfortable saying that. So, you know, I don't want to say it in front of everybody. It's a little embarrassing. Okay, fine. So can we work out a signal? Okay. This whole thing about, you know, establishing a fail-safe is about listening to the person and looking at the situation and knowing, you know, like, and then finding a solution that works for everybody involved. It's just exercising good judgment. I can't expand on how you create fail-safes because that mental process is what you have to go through every time. For example, if Beth had come to me and said, listen, I want to play in your game, but I want you to know I have a real issue with the West African tsetse fly. They terrify me. The whole idea, like I wake up in cold sweats at night, terrified that flies are going to bite me and then I will have sleeping sickness and die. And I will look at her and I will say, I can promise you that at no point in the game will I include the West African tsetse fly because, you know, I have not heard of such a thing since I played the Atari 2600 Indiana Jones game, you know, or that kind of a thing where like, okay, now I'm assessing how much of a risk this is and I can deal with it. Can I deal with it? Like, no danger here, no fail safe needed. Whatever the issue is, you have to assess the situation as it is, figure out what the likely risks are and what the cost of a screw up is. If Beth had said to me, look, you know, I don't have a phobia or anything. It's not anxiety. I just find spiders icky. Can you not? I'd be like, well, I really like using spiders. Is that okay? And then she might be like, well, it's like icky to the point where I would rather not game if spiders. I'm like, okay, fine. Then I will not use spiders out of respect for you. But if they come up by accident, are you okay? Like, could you? And then she might be like, yeah, you know what? I understand. If you promise you won't build encounters around them, if they slip into flavor text once in a while, fine. You know, and that's it. So this is not about how to build a failsafe, okay? Because there is, but this is why this shit has to be a conversation. Why it can't just be, here, write down a list of things I'm not allowed to say and I will not say them, you know? Because then you can't assess these risks and you can't figure out solutions to when the lines are crossed and what to do about it. And even then, even if you find the failsafes, like failsafe is a stupid word because it's not going to be 100% of a failsafe. I still might slip and then Beth might knock, or I might slip and say something that is so upsetting in one, like I might just slip and say, you know, you brush past cobwebs and then spiders fall down on your face and crawl in your mouth. Like, because that's a perfectly normal thing that would happen to people in my world. I say that sort of thing all the time. And then she might just go catatonic. She might not even have time to knock. She might go catatonic. In which case, that's when the second level is, oh my God, I am so sorry. Okay, everybody take a break. I made a mistake. Get her a drink of water, call the game for the night, like that kind of a thing. It's like, you got to deal with the situation in front of you. And that's it. Guy Quayle has been desperately typing like some sort of follow-up or some expansion or some additional question, but, you know, that ain't how we do. Plus, I know Proselys has been sending me he sent me warnings. 5-minute warning, so that means I'm now down to a 2-minute warning, which is just enough time for me to say goodbye. So thanks everybody for hanging out. I hope this was useful and helpful, and I will talk to you all soon. Okay. A question came in just at the wire while I was saying goodbye, and I do want to address it because I get the sense that Guy Quayle is dancing around asking me about a specific real situation here. I could be wrong, but I'm going to answer this, but I'm also going to say no more questions or follow-ups or anything else. So Guy Quayle asks, instead of lines and veils, what do you do for... Oh, Proselyst, don't mute me. Instead of lines and veils, what do you do for players who are reliant on them? Or players who don't have a healthy sense of social propriety of what is and is not okay at the table? What talk do you give them to cover your bases? Okay, see, now again, you're asking me for hypothetical advice. Like, imagine that players of this general description were at my table. And again, that ain't what I do. What you do is you have a specific player in front of you who wants to give you a lines and veils survey. Okay. Adam wants to give you a lines and veils. I filled this out for you so that you won't upset me. Now, you have to decide how you want to deal with that. Knowing everything you now know about lines and veils, that's what you do. I do not have a general solution to what if hypothetical player did hypothetical thing. Because it's going to vary on the player and the situation. If this was a random stranger who I recruited on the internet for a campaign I was running and I knew I could fill that seat with someone else, I'd be like, you know what? Going to be honest, you're probably not a good fit for my table. Or at least I would say, I don't do that, okay? If you have a specific issue that is, you know, a serious trauma that needs to be respected, then let me know and I will have a discussion with you about it. If you don't feel that we can discuss it, privately, discreetly, in a trusting and open way, I don't feel comfortable running a game for you. Okay, that's right. If it is a good friend of mine, then I can have a much more frank conversation where it's like, look, I don't do that, but dude, I've known you for years. Tell me what's going on. Let's figure out, work this out, you know? As far as players who don't have a healthy sense of social propriety and don't know what is or is not okay at the table, I don't assume anything, okay? This is not a guess I make. So if there is a player who does not understand what is and is not okay at the table, the way I will discover that is when they do something that is not okay at the table, okay? Until then, I'm not trying to guess and assess the person. When they do something that is not okay at the table, depending on how serious it is, I may let it sit until the end of the session, or I may just stop the session right there. And then we have a private conversation. And I say, this thing you just did, this is not okay at the table. You cannot do this again. Okay? And, you know, and that is it. It's just this thing you just did, not okay. Done. Okay? If they want to know why, again, conversation then. And you can't pre-hypothetically plan a conversation, because a conversation is a back and forth and give or take. You have to listen, you have to respond, listen, respond, listen, respond. If I can't make them understand, if I can't grant, if it hits a point where we're not reaching an understanding, then the end result is, I can't have you at my table. This is a social game. If you don't know how to behave socially, you can't play a social game. It is just like if we were playing soccer and you don't know how to kick, like at all, like you try to kick and like your arms move or something, somehow you missed kicking day, you missed kickball in elementary school, and you literally do not know how to kick. You know what? I don't have enough time in my life to then fill in the gaps in your physical education. But I'm trying to get a game of soccer going here, and I can't have people playing soccer who don't know how to kick, who run up and try to kick the ball, but instead they punch the person next to them and then fall on the ground. Okay, that's not, this is a social game. If people cannot behave in a social way, they can't play. If they're a really good friend of mine and I want to keep them at the table and I think it's really, really worth it, then, and I think I can get somewhere with the conversation and there's a lot of personal relationship there, then yeah, I might sit down and spend hours and hours and, you know, like, look, here's the thing, dude, you know, this, you can't say things like this to people. It's, you got to have tact. Okay. That's it. And this, and again, this is not about, because the final part of your question is what talk do you give them to cover your bases? There is no talk I give anyone to cover my bases. I'm not covering my bases. I'm responding to situations. I'm running a game. When a situation arises where a player does something inappropriate at the table, I address it then and there. If someone hands me a lines and veils survey, I say, I don't do that shit. You got something you need to talk to me about? You know, my office is open. Let's talk. We'll see what we can, we'll work out what we can work out. But no, I'm not taking that list. I'm sorry. I don't do that. And then again, all of the other shit as to, you know, what is my goal here? Is my goal to retain this person or to free up the seat for someone else? Because that's going to determine how much time and energy I'm going to put into this. And, you know, I've done it all. You know, I've had every situation. I've had the best friend who, you know, whose temper is so bad, they can't play at my game anymore. Okay? They're too competitive. They're too angry. They can't play at my game anymore. I've had that. That sucks. But there, and you know, there was no fixing it. I've had the internet stranger who was an acquaintance. I've had, like, because of this whole thing with the Patreon shit, I've had people who are paying me for membership in this community that I've then had to confront about their behavior at the table and say, look, I can't have you at my game table. This is not the way. And that adds a whole other ugly dimension to it because now it's money too. You know, and it's gonna cost me bucks to send this person away from the table. So the only solution is you take every situation as it comes. You figure out what you're trying to accomplish. You know, what is your goal, and you address the situation and try to reach that goal. And when you're working with other human beings, you accept that you only have about 50% of the influence you need to determine whether or not you hit the goal or not. The other the person you're talking to, they also have a say. And if their choice is, I'm not working with you in any way, screw you, I'm doing this my way, then the answer is, then I'm sorry, we can't, if there's nowhere we can meet, we can't play together, you must go. And that is now it. And that little, I'm just going to take a few minutes to answer that question, I think just expanded into another 10 or 15 minutes. But so anyway, but I think it was an important speech. So there you go. Now that's the answer. And now I'm done.